All right. Case number 3 is United States against Laura Baxter. Mr. Ackerman.
Please support. Mr. Hines and gentlemen from the government, I'm Alan Ackerman. I represent Laura Baxter. We are challenging, as the two predecessor arguments did, a sentence that was imposed. Unlike the others, there is a specific reference in our case where Chief Judge Holderman indicated there were certain factors he was not to consider.
Now, is it your position, Mr. Ackerman, that that statement is inaccurate 100%, or can you think of anything as to which that statement would be true even now? I mean, for example, I guess what I will say is if what Chief Judge Holderman meant was that he was not to take into account that this was a female defendant rather than a male defendant, or if he meant even after all is said and done, I'm not allowed to sentence in a disparate way on the basis of race, we would all agree that that's correct, would we not? They're constitutional.
Even though that's a Socratic question, the answer is yes.
Right. And so what tells us that Judge Holderman was worried about the old-fashioned forbidden factors in the guidelines as opposed to the continuing need not to sentence in violation of the Constitution?
Well, we have the government's take on it at page 13 of their brief, where, among other things, they say, defendant actually had it right the first time. We simply do not know what the judge was referring to when he made the statement that Your Honor just referred to.
Right.
It is our position that what Judge Holderman was talking about were those things that had been prohibited in advance of the advisory guidelines. And for the government's part, they say they don't know what the judge meant. So, it's our position, and actually it's Chief Judge Holderman's position, that he wants this case back. And I'll get to that, if I may, in a moment. There are two issues here. The one, obviously, the presiding judge, the Chief, Your Honor, just referred to. And that is, what did the judge mean here? I don't know. But our position is that the judge was telling the defendant that he could not consider certain things that may have favorably impacted on a sentence.
But I suppose what you're really arguing is that when the meaning is unclear, the tie, as it were, goes to the defendant, that unless the judge is clear that he's only considering things that are permissible, then the defendant is entitled to a remand. That has to be, I mean, somebody has to resolve the ambiguity somehow, and you must be arguing that.
That is a succinct summary, yes, Your Honor. There is another factor here, and in the government's brief, and I know the court's familiar with it, the government says also Judge Holderman was wrong, because after all, Judge Holderman used the wrong guideline. And then the question is, well, if the government says, maintains before this court that the district court was wrong, and we maintain the district court was wrong, then there should be no option but to remand with directions that the court reconsider the sentence and total.
But I suppose one of the things the government's implying is if we were to do what you're asking us to do, vacate this sentence and remand it for a new sentencing proceeding, would Chief Judge Holderman not be free to, and indeed perhaps obliged, to use the correct version of the guidelines?
He would only be obliged if the court please, if he feels that this court's decision, as authored, I believe, by Judge Posner, Damari, or some such name, mandated that the A4 section in 3553 means that it has to be at the date of sentencing. Now, Damari also says, or relates, if I read it correctly, that the district court can essentially go anywhere the district court wants, and there's only a very light or unfettered review.
He uses the word unfettered, but the statute says use the version of the guidelines that is in effect at the time of sentencing. The government points out that would have been a version less favorable to your client. And so I'm wondering if this is one of those be careful what you wish for, you might get it circumstances.
I have permission from my client to argue as I am.
All right.
She is confident, perhaps mistakenly so, but she is confident that on remand, given other factors, including the proposition that she now, based on some work that we did after sentencing, maintains that the advisory guideline range, as it was, is also incorrect, and it's lower. So those are the primary reasons. And there's one thing that bothers me. My opponent, a very fine gentleman, you'll hear from him shortly, proffered a little letter asking the court to consider a recent Seventh Circuit decision indicating that there is no need for this court to even concern itself with Rita versus United States, which the Supreme Court heard on February 20. They heard argument. And the essence of Rita, if I read it correctly, was that the challenge in large part is the presumption of reasonableness, which this court clings to almost as a religion. So if that presumption is gone, per the Supreme Court, then that whole line of cases, Judge Easterbrook's recent decision notwithstanding his Rule 23J letter, would have no meaning at all. So having said that, I'll sit down now.
Oh, before you sit down, Mr. Ackerman, you
yes.
said that,
yes,
maybe I misunderstood what you said, but I thought you were telling us that Judge Holderman was hoping to get this case sent back to him.
Oh, yes.
And I think that's sort of unusual when he had two sentencing hearings already. Most district judges are glad to close the door and not see the case again.
I had thought that a December 14, 2006 transcript was part of the record here, and if it's not, I apologize. I can tender it to our clerk, but Mr. Hines, my opponent, was there. And during an argument on whether the district court would stay the execution of the sentence pending appeal, it became a little contentious, the arguments. Not with me now, between...
Oh,
no, this was between Chief Judge Holderman and my opponent. And at one point, Judge Holderman looked down to my opponent and said, isn't there some way we can ask the Court of Appeals to send this back to me? And my opponent said, well, we don't agree to that. And that's exactly what happened, and I'd be glad to leave this with the deputy. This is the transcript. And it says that, and Mr. Hines will affirm it.
I don't think you have to leave it with anybody. We feel it's necessary.
We will call for it. And
we'll
find out what the government thinks about this as well. So thank you very much, Mr. Ackerman. Mr. Hines.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. As Judge Wood noted just a few moments ago, the defense appeal concerning the reasonableness of the sentence seems to be based on a single statement made by the district court. And we don't know what the court meant by that, but very well could have been stating the simple principle that even today, the court can't base its decision on a factor such as the fact that the defendant is female rather than male.
But why would he have said the sentencing guidelines require me not to consider? That's an odd way of saying there's a constitutional prohibition.
Judge, again, we really don't know what he was referring to at that point. I mean,
not in some ultimate, you know, epistemological sense, but the truth is the common sense reading of that first sentence of the point in contention is the sentencing guidelines say that they're forbidden factors, which they did, except that now those are advisory, and we've said in quite a few opinions that that concept is out the window.
That's true, and the judge at various points throughout all these proceedings noted the advisory nature of the guidelines. I mean, it was crystal clear to the judge that that was a starting point
Right, and there are no forbidden factors, though. He didn't say, and there are no forbidden factors, does he?
No, he didn't. He didn't say that there was anything that he was failing to consider in this case. To the contrary, Judge, the parties at the time of the final sentencing hearing spoke at great length about virtually each of the factors under Section 3553 and how the defense or the government felt that they weighed in the judge's determination of the final reasonable sentence. And the judge considered those. He explicitly discussed each of those as he was pronouncing sentence.
Are you making a version of a harmless error argument? If he meant the sentencing guidelines require him not to consider certain factors, but nothing happened, it sounds to me like you're making a harmless error argument.
Well, Judge, actually there was no complaint to the district court at that time about that statement, no objection to it, no request for clarification. It would be even a plain error argument that the government would be making. But in fact, there's no error whatsoever, plain, clear, or otherwise, given the fact that the judge did precisely what this court has said needs to be done when the district court imposes a sentence on someone these days. He used the advisory guidelines as a starting point. From there, considered all the different 3553A factors, which were, again, as I said, related to him in great detail. He, in pronouncing sentence, discussed each of them, including the one that counsel says in this appeal that the court disregarded. He says the history and characteristics of Ms. Baxter, of course, dictate toward a lighter sentence. But then he went on to consider how that weighed in along with the other factors, such as the nature and circumstances of the offense and the need for deterrence and all the other factors set forth in the statute. And the judge, having weighed those
factors about her public service, basically the discounts for seniors and
he didn't go into all the details as to any of the particular categories, I guess you could say, or the different factors that are listed there. But certainly, that's what was presented to the court. The court didn't say, don't waste my time by presenting this to me. It's something I can't consider. Rather, the court said he considered it at length. He says he read the letters over and over again. He heard four witnesses testify about it. And he talks about having considered the history and characteristics of Ms. Baxter. So the court clearly was considering that. He just, in the final analysis, when he weighed all the factors, came to the conclusion, an eminently reasonable conclusion in this case, that a reasonable sentence was one that was at the low end of the sentencing guidelines range in this case.
What about Rita? I mean, of course, we know that Rita was just argued, and we've spoken about it in Gamma Gonzalez and other cases, but...
Right. And I guess I would just refer to the discussion of it by this court in Gamma Gonzalez, which says the court has a lot of discretion, and given that discretion, there's no need to wait for a decision in Rita. The court in this case clearly acted within its discretion. Having considered all those factors, it clearly exercised its discretion and imposed a reasonable sentence in this case. And Your Honor was also asking about the sentencing guidelines and how...
The version of the guidelines.
That was simply part of the government's argument in response to the second point that was raised on appeal, which was that there should be... there was actually a lower tax loss figure that should have been applied in this case, notwithstanding the fact that the parties had agreed to the figure of $576,000.
The new threshold is $400,000, if I remember?
Under the 2005 guidelines, which were the ones in effect at the time of sentencing, yes, the cutoff point is $400,000 and goes to $1 million.
So going down to 515 doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't help at all, and in fact, as the government pointed out, the starting point, the advisory guidelines range, instead of being 24 to 30 months, would be 30 to 36 months, given the three-year cap in this case. So there could be no harm to the defendant. Actually, she was better off with the way that the court applied the guidelines at the time of sentencing. So in light of all those points, the government asked the court to affirm the sentence of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything more, Mr. Ackerman?
Yes. I believe my opponent candidly acknowledged that the government does not know what Judge Holderman meant. Neither do we. before somebody is remanded to the Bastille for 24 months or some other figure, it strikes me as prudent to permit the district court to decide whether the district court erred on that score. Hence, we'd ask again for remand. And I fully understand the caution that Your Honor has posed here. That's our position, and I thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.